everyone, welcome to a what would be bonus episode of the Magic Box, but since last week was a bit of an abortion, not going to lie, I think that it's kind of important for us to bring it back, center a little bit, and bring you a much smoother episode. Having too many guests, not doing a lot of prep with those people ahead of time, to really have a podcast format instead of a lot of people yelling at the screen, and not really if you're doing a very good job of podcasting.
Yeah,
I was a little ashamed of what we put out, so beyond keeping in track with it once a week, we thought this was a great opportunity to also get the live audience on the East Coast side and bring an extra episode here. So here we are on Monday, the afternoon after the mocks. We may touch on the cube portion of the mocks today if we have time, but we'd also like to get more information about the pack contents from the cube packs. Sam Party or Smidster?
SMDster?
Estiminster. From the Mox, who's a good friend of ours, would like us to do a little analysis breakdown there. But he did, ended up in a very unconventional deck, as we found out.
Yeah. It was certainly a rare one.
But it was effective. He, great thing about Sam is he's cubed enough that he knows how to make it work. And I love that of his deck. I really wish we could have watched every single one of his games. I'm sure it would have been exciting. But for what we did get, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It's funny, I watched the stream for like 2 to 3 hours at various points, and I did not see him on it once.
I would come in and out, and I did catch him. I would definitely, like, I would, like, have the audio on in the background and wait to hear his name, and then, like, cut back, even in the standard portion. But mostly the cube portion was what I was really interested in.
Yeah.
Are we live? Yeah. It says we're offline on the Twitch side.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I mean, we're live.
Huh. Weird.
Nothing has changed.
Interesting. All right, well, we'll just trudge onward, because we know the audio is recording, so why bother? I know, we had a computer crash last week as well, which has now put us very much on edge. It's very frightening.
Yeah, it's true. I'm pins and needles.
We're going to have to reload that side. We can't see the chat window.
Yeah, we can. It's right there.
Ah, there it is. Yeah, it still seems offline. Okay, so that being said, again, anyone who's recorded a podcast out there, the other thing about our mid-show crash last week was you kind of get in a groove. You're kind of talking about a subject, and all of a sudden, everything just shits out on you.
The worst part, too, is, like, I didn't even know the moment that it crashed, because, like, everything on my screen was frozen. But, like, it's not, like, my computer blue screen or anything. So we were just talking, and then I looked up, and I was like, hey, wait a minute. The video's not changing at all anymore.
You were literally trying to click through.
Yeah.
Okay, so as we wait for the room to populate over on the broadcast side, we'll hesitate a little bit before we get into Pick a Pack. But we'll say to kind of cover on the show today, you know, there's been a lot of talk. You know, a lot of people over the years have definitely asked me how you get into cube. How do you start cubing? It seems like this huge hill to climb to go from zero to cube. And in the past, I'd written a skeleton cube list, which we may look at the old version just for kicks. But we also have, for you special today, I spent a lot of time over the weekend putting together what I would consider to be a very good skeleton cube list here for 2013. If you were to go from zero to cube tomorrow, what you could put together pretty much on a budget, have it work out, and have it look really great. And it mirrors a little bit of what I did back in 2009 for it. So, you know, again, if you want to have that, well, we are live. Mark, we're sure we're live?
All right. Yep.
Eck is doing a little testing in the background, make
just
sure we're still there.
Just making sure everything is not bursting into flames actively.
All right. So that's our main topic today. We'll touch back on the You Make the Card, and there are other topics that we'd want to talk about. But we don't know if we'll have time today. Again, we'll have the regular show on Wednesday to cover those other things. We actually have a long laundry list of topics we will cover eventually. And some of them bleed together. You know, the conversation from last week talking about just the tap lands Mirage entering cube. Kind of want to talk about lands in general, talk about thinning your deck, graveyards, resources, and those kind of things. I'm not sure in what order we'll hit those topics, but those will all be things we will touch on the show. But let's get right into our pick-a-pack for this week. Or
today,
one of the two of this week.
Of this day.
We'll bring it up, and I'll let Eck tell everyone at home what we're looking at.
Okay, so for today's pack, we have Tanglewire, Force of Will, Celestia Guildmage, Incinerate, Hellion Crucible, Orm's Thunder, Flametongue Kavu, The Abyss, Consecrated Sphinx, Kozilek Butcher of Truth, Stronghold Rats, Kadama's Reach, Sphinx of Dwar Isle, Volcanic Island, and Aether Vial?
You say that questioningly, like, are these cards?
Well, I mean, not a lot of them really are stellar.
Really? You've said all
of them? The fact is pretty bad.
Really?
I think so.
I disagree. It's so weird to me, seeing the 3x5 layout on all these cube packs, my eyes seem to always kind of go dead center. I think the last time this really happened was with Chain Lightning, and it was like the only red card.
Just staring back at you.
Yeah, now I'm like, the Abyss, I have to draft the Abyss deck, there's the Abyss. It's also kind of the only black card. I think if I was to open this pack, I would have a hard time not taking the Abyss.
Really? If I opened this pack, I would have a hard time not taking Tanglewire.
Oh.
Because that card is so fun, and the deck that it goes in is also sweet.
Tell us more about the deck that it goes in.
I mean, just being, like, the generally red, like, really aggressive list, potentially, like, even LD. Like, Tanglewire is one of those poster childs for cards that look fair but are, in fact, no way fair.
I'll give you that. Now, you were very quick to say that Tanglewire red cards. Do you think that in the cube, Tanglewire is a red card?
I mean, it tends to work best in red just because, like, it's the best use of Tanglewire is, like, play a 1-drop, play a 2-drop or 2 1-drops, then play Tanglewire.
Yeah, that's a bit of a dream. I mean, it's obviously not outside of the realm of possibility, but that is the goal. You know, top-decking Tanglewire is rarely good in the game.
But also
playing
it
in the middle of the game could...
Top-decking Tanglewire is potentially better in red because you also have access to Shrapnel Blast.
And Land Destruction Spell. Ways to kind of choke your opponent out of resources. Maybe they're holding back on lands because you played Ankh of Mishra. Maybe you can tap your Ankh of Mishra to Tanglewire.
Like, that's living the dream.
Yeah. These are all true statements. It's just so weird to me. I look at Tanglewire as kind of the throwaway card in this pack. It's definitely not on the power level of...
There's some throwaway cards in this pack, but they are not Tanglewire.
I mean, purely on power level, to me it's like Abyss, Spaghetti Monster, 2 Sphinxes, and a Flame Tongue Kavu.
I mean, sure, like, those are the most powerful cards, but...
So you would take a Tanglewire over the most powerful cards in the pack?
Like, the thing is like, I'm happy taking Tanglewire out of this pack because it's... Other than Incinerate, it's really the only, like, purely aggressive card in the pack. Like,
poor Flame Tongue Kavu, poor Celestnia Guildmage.
Those are both very mid-rangey. Like, I...
Poor Aether Vial?
I honestly, like, in good aggressive red decks, I really don't want to be playing Flame Tongue Kavu. Because it is too slow. And, like, the aggressive red 4-drops are just so insane. Like, I would much rather have...
I think Flame Tongue Kavu is one of those aggressive red 4-drops.
No, because, like, it doesn't have haste. Like, it's no Hellrider, it's no Hero of Oxid Ridge.
Sure, but even if it sits on the bronze-level podium of those cards, I'm not complaining.
But I'm just saying, like, this pack is very clearly really heavily slanted towards a lot of powerful control cards, or at the very least, mid-range cards. Like, you've got 2 Sphinxes, you've got the Abyss, you've got Kozilek, you've got... There's Force of Will, Kadama's Reach. There's a lot of cards that are very much going to push people into playing, like, slower, kind of plotting control decks.
So it kind of puts me on the fence about Tanglewire, because on the one hand, maybe that makes it more appealing, because sure, you know, all the other cards in this pack are going to probably indicate to other players they're going to play slower, more over, you know, Haymaker landing kind of decks, while at the same time, your chances of wheeling something out of this pack dwindle drastically.
That's not true. I think you get Aether Vial back a fair amount of times. I think you might even... You might get Incinerate. I don't know. I feel like the other red drafter would probably take Flame Tongue Kavu over it. But I think that you get Aether Vial back a fair amount of times.
You get Hellion Crucible back a fair amount of times.
At worst, yeah.
If you turn 3 Tanglewire, turn 4 untap, look at your hand with nothing to do, I guess you could... You could put some pressure on, yeah.
So, like... You know.
I think I'm first picking Abyss, personally.
I don't know. In a draft where, like, the people to your left end up taking, you know, Consecrated Sphinx, Kozilek Sphinx of Dwar Isle, Kadama's Reach, Tanglewire is, like, exactly where I want to be.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. When we look at this pack, your chances of wheeling something spectacular are lower, but you're also seeing a lot of cards that go into slower decks where Tanglewire is going to punish them.
It's like, instead of, like, you know, the concept of, like, cutting a color, you're, like, pushing the people downstream from you into slow control archetypes, and you're picking up on, like, being the fastest aggressive deck you can, and Tanglewire is sweet in that deck, and sweet against all of those super slow, stupid control decks trying to play six drops and stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting how if you take Tanglewire this pack and then shipped 14 cards, I'd be very interested. I'd be like, it would be funny because to me it's like Force of Will, Sphinx, Abyss, Kozilek, Flame Tongue Kavu. Those are all things that they're going to slower decks, which is pretty funny to me. I don't know, I still want to break off the Abyss here, and I mean, like, if I take the Abyss, I'm happy to wheel a Sphinx, an Aether Vial, even, like, Celestial Guildmage kind of interacts with Abyss in a profitable way for a deck that can play Abyss. I mean, like, Abyss into Sphinx of Jar Isle is just ridiculous. But I don't know if you're going to table Sphinx of Jar Isle. Like, if I take the Abyss, I can pretty much guarantee that Tanglewire is gone, Incinerate is gone, Flame Tongue Kavu is gone, Kadama's Reach Around is gone, Volcanic Island is gone. How many cards have I named? One, two...
All of them are gone somehow.
I don't know. Yeah, it's funny, though, if I take Abyss, I'd rather see Sphinx of Jar Isle come back than Consecrated Sphinx.
Well, yeah.
There's so many other...
combo.
Yes, the Shroud versus the Abyss combo. Mm. Where one of those times where Shroud is superior to Hexproof.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think, like, this pack is just a giant pile of control cards, and I really want to be the aggressor, and Tanglewire is always a great marquee card for an aggressive deck.
That's fine. That's legitimate. I can understand why you're taking Tanglewire from that argument. When I first looked at this pack, to me, it was an easy throwaway card. I was not interested. To me, this was a fight between some blue cards and the Abyss, and the Abyss was winning in my mind. If you take the Abyss and the Tanglewire out of the equation, to me, it's which blue card are you taking? So right. You have to weigh two Sphinxes against a Force of Will, which can be really hard. Consecrated Sphinx obviously plays really well with Force of Will. Sphinx of Jar Isle just plays really well in general. Regardless, we have made clear picks here. We can defend. And in this circumstance, I would like to be downwind of this pack. Yeah. I'd be very happy to take some of the things that were being left behind out of there. A lot of big haymakers.
And I think that, like, that pack looks... like, there are not a lot of packs that, like, change rapidly some in terms of, like, what their composition looks like. But that one, like, depending on what, like, the first two or three picks look like, that one from that is, like, a completely different ballgame.
I mean, again, you and I, we look at that pack... first of all, it's great because it's cute, because we can each take something different, and the drafts will go completely different directions for us. But also, if we're at the same table and we see these cards, we're very happy with each other, because I'm gonna draft, I mean, probably black-white, but not exclusively. I'm going to draft some kind of black Abyss control deck, and you're going to draft some kind of aggressive, probably red deck, but not necessarily. It's funny, like you could kind of go off on a tangent about Tanglewire. I don't think it's specifically a red card. I think that it's obviously very good at red, because red has land destruction, red has more of the Goblin Guide type cards, but at the same time, it's excellent with the green decks that are going to out-token you, it's excellent in the white decks that have, you know, creature, Tanglewire, Flicker Wisp.
I mean, I like Tanglewire in decks that have the lowest possible curve. Like, you know, in an ideal, like, Tanglewire-y kind of deck, like, 4 is the absolute top of the curve. And, like, most of it is at 2-1. And the best decks that are mostly 2-1 drops are red. Like, red has just... I mean, like, some of white's 2 drops are good, but none of them are as good as Goblin Guide.
Yeah.
And you can just, like, go so deep on always having, like, you know, 2-power guy, another 2-power guy, or 3-power guy into Tanglewire. And, like, that's such a... especially against, like, you know, even decks with the Abyss or Sphinx of Jar Isle or whatever, it's just so backbreaking. Like, you just... It's just really punishing to effectively time-walk someone after you put 4 power on the table.
Yeah, I mean, that was what Tanglewire used to be in Old Extended, and that's why the red decks would jam 4 of it all the time. And I think outside of those decks, I think the Trinity decks were probably the second most likely decks to play Tanglewire in what was not Mono Blue Tinker era. I think that was really the time when you saw it the most. Good pack.
Yeah.
I like that one. That was a different talking point than I wanted it to be, but it worked out just fine. I really wish we could see how many people were in the room with us. It's kind of annoying that we can't right now.
I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that either. Here we are for the East Coast crowd, and we have no idea if they're actually making a showing today or not. Instead, the room is populated with people we already know.
We'll find out later.
We will find out later. So,
is the worst red one-drop Tattermunch Maniac, and if so, does any one or two-drop in white trump him outside of Mom or Stoneforge?
Trump him?
I mean, Elite Vanguard's just a better Tattermunch Maniac, right?
Tattermunch Maniac isn't even in the cube right now. I mean, not strictly. Probably because we've moved away from the Jungle Lion Pouncing Jaguar aspect of green. And Tattermunch Maniac, it's such a... Oh, God. I really hate that card.
Like, the fact that it's red-green hybrid is kind of like a trick. Because, like, you know...
It would be a lot better if it was red-white hybrid. I'll give you that. I'd be much more likely to put it...
red-black hybrid.
Oh, yeah. Red-black hybrid or red-white hybrid, Tattermunch Maniac has a shot. Red-green hybrid, just the way green has been moving in cube.
Green is
ever since we took away the Jungle Lion and Friends.
Yeah.
Which kind of moves into, you know, if you want to talk, we could talk about the spoiler cards that we've seen over the PAX weekend at that point. What's the name of the green?
I don't remember his name off the top of my head.
To the internet, Eck. Make it happen while we bring it up.
It's something.
Now, we saw a double green vanilla 3-3. No upsides, no downsides.
It's a beast, I think.
Oh, it's a beast. That's a bit of an upside.
It's a mild upside.
Yeah, I mean, if we ever bring in Contested Cliffs or bring back Ravenous Baloth.
Kalonian Tusker.
It is a beast.
Yeah.
I think there was a better picture running around the internet than that one. But we can bring that one up for the people at home. Just so you, although it's really not hard to understand what we're talking about. You might want to see the artwork.
Horrible picture.
You see, horrible. It looks fine. Yeah. And it kind of, you know, talking about the card, it was kind of like, well, you know, I don't really think that's where green is right now. And it kind of brought up the conversation, like, well, what is it going to take for that vanilla 3-3 to make it into your cube? You know, if it was a green and a colorless, would that be good enough? And it made me kind of think, you know, maybe this means, you know, more cards like this, maybe that means it's the end of the reign of Wild Mongrel. Maybe we're moving away from...
I've been kind of an advocate of cutting Wild Mongrel for a while, and my argument for it is mostly that, like, the discarding cards to pump it over time has been less useful as a pump spell and more useful as an enabler for other things.
Right, and like, and some of those things have left. Like, we don't have blue-green madness cards in the cube.
No, but, like...
They're not strong enough on their own to play.
For, like, Reanimator and stuff like that, like, that's really the only place that I see...
The Survival of the Fittest Recurring Nightmare deck,
sure,
which is already really good on its own. It doesn't need Wild Mongrel as
an enabler.
But,
like, that's kind of the only place that I see Mongrel succeeding. And if all you're looking for is, like, a discard outlet, like, there are better ones than just Mongrel.
I mean, he's kind of like... Maybe this is the too obvious of a conclusion. He's kind of like the poor man's Psychotog in the way where it's like, attack.
That is a poor-ass man's Psychotog.
Well, no, think about it. With the green decks, or the aggressive decks in general, sure, you're going to be applying more pressure than attack for one, attack for one, attack for one, attack for 17. Instead, you're going to be like, attack, you know, attack with Wild Mongrel, no blocks, all right, take two. Attack for Wild Mongrel, no blocks, all right, take two. You know, mix and repeat, and eventually it's like, how many cards in your hand... 5, well, I'm at 9, I don't know if I want to block him now, maybe I have to block him.
It's funny, I've actually been thinking, you know, every time a new set starts looming on the horizon, you know, you see the trickles of spoilers, there's the Rorik Thar, the Unbound, do you see that guy? For Dragon's Gate? Or Dragon's Maze, or whatever?
Is that is he Gruul? Is he
Gruul? Yeah, he's the Gruul, the 6/6.
Yeah. For 4 colorless, a red and a green mana, you get a 6/6 Vigilance Reach, who must attack every turn if able, and whenever any player casts a non-creature spell, he's going to deal 6 damage to that player, which is pretty sweet.
I mean, that's not bad. It doesn't have Trample, which makes me a very sad panda.
No, I think the point of this card, and what I would really like something like this to do, is if you sized it down, it becomes a real threat.
Yeah.
The fact that it's so big...
If that was like a 3-3 for 3?
I mean, if you just shrunk all the numbers down on this card, it would be a lot better, because it would be an aggressive creature. The fact that it's so big, that's kind of one of those things where it's like a strange... extra shields up kind of maneuver against Wraths in the end game, which is just too slow and not consistent enough.
What I do like about it is that you play it, and if they want to kill it, he just domes them.
Like, yeah, but he has to attack every, like, the part that makes it fair is that he attacks every turn, so your opponent has a 3-3 and a 4-4.
Sure.
He has to just swing into them.
Yeah.
But it's not even like your opponent has to lay...
You're playing red, so you can theoretically deal with that, and you're probably more...
So you're gonna, like, lightning bolt their 3-3, take 6 to the face, so your guy...
You're probably in a better shape to take the damage than they are, ideally. In a red deck.
Right. But ultimately, this card to me boils down to it's too big.
Anyway, I agree. This is kind of a non sequitur. What I was trying to get at is that when new sets are on the horizon and the spoiler season kind of starts, one of the things I always do is start thinking about cube cards that I want.
Okay.
Not necessarily like the new ones, like every spoiler card, like, oh, I want that. But like older cards, either stuff that's on the bench, stuff that we haven't thought about or whatever. And I'm still kind of like compiling my list of maybes.
Right.
But one of them would be a Wild Mongrel swap for another two-mana green creature.
Okay.
What do you think about Scrib Ranger?
It's very tricky.
It is super tricky.
But I'm failing to see what it's doing that's really positive.
It's being really, really tricky.
To what end? What's it untapping, other than, like, Raphelos?
That's a pretty sweet one. I mean, even just, like...
A guy that needs no help already, yeah.
Like, it's sweet in, like, cases of if you don't have land drops. Like, if you have, like, a Land War Elves and you don't have a forest, or you have a land to play, you can tap your Land War Elves for mana, tap your forest for mana, return your land, attack your Land War Elves, replay your land.
Yeah.
So effectively generate two mana with that guy.
Just like Quirion Ranger.
Yeah.
Or you could add Quirion Ranger for that exact reason.
But Scrib Ranger flies and has Pro Blue and Flash.
Yeah, and I'm still looking for, like, where that's really good.
Flying green is kind of sweet. Slap a Rancor on that bad boy.
It's just so weird. I mean, when evaluating green 2-drops, which there aren't a super large abundance of, and when we move over to the Skeleton Cube side of this, it'll make more sense because we're going to talk about... Mana Curve is really important in Skeleton Cube because there are so few cards. Green, right now in Cube, is the best at going right from 1 to 3. And... having a 2-drop means that 2-drop really has to do something different. It has to be Fauna Shaman. It has to be Stranglered Geist because it's going to undie and or have haste, which is really good. 2-drops in green have to be Tarmogoyf. They have to really be 5/6s. They don't have to be 2/2s. That's why, to me, looking at this new... What is it? Colonian Beast or whatever?
Something like that. Colonian something.
Just being a 3/3 for 2, it's just like, well, you know, that's not really where... Or Tusker...
Yeah,
it's a Colonian Tusker. This isn't really where green is attacking from right now. You know, maybe if there are enough of these cards in the future, we revert back. We start to pull out the redundant Llanowar Elves. We bring back in the Jungle Lion, the Pouncing Jaguar, the Garrick's Companion,
add
this guy, Gazban Ogre,
or not Jack,
Wild Dogs.
That's the
one. Because, you know, slowly over time we moved away from that. And I think, you know, losing things like Albino Troll really was the end of that kind of aggressive green era where green went like, oh, still, we can attack, we can have friends. We're just going to, you know, every time we pair up with red, it's more likely we're going to go from 1 to 3, 4 to 5. We're not going to go 1 drop, 2 drop, 3 drop like aggressive red decks, aggressive white decks, or aggressive black decks would do.
Yeah.
So, that being said, you know, Tusker by himself is really underwhelming. Like, yeah, he's ahead of the curve. Like, yeah, he's a really good card. But I'm not looking at him being like, yeah, this is the direction I really want to go with green creatures in my cube right now. But it does bring up the conversation about Wild Mongrel. What do we do with that guy?
And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't feel that, like, Wild Mongrel's doing much of anything these days. Like, he rarely makes the cut, even in most green decks.
If I'm playing a green aggressive deck, if I'm playing... Yeah, really, we're talking, like, green, white, green, red. Well, even green, blue a little bit.
But again...
Not as much.
Again, like, he is... not a first run. Like, I don't want to be playing Wild Mongrel. If I'm playing Wild Mongrel, even in an aggressive deck, I feel like I've done poorly. Like, cards are too good now. Discarding cards for +1/+1 is so horrible value across the table, because cards are way too good.
And it's important to point out that as Cube has evolved in the last 3 or 4 years, Black has felt so needed to find ways to deal with Black creatures. It's not like the other kind of shroud shield that Mongrel used to have, we're going to be like, oh, he's black, can't gaslightize him, can't tear him,
yeah.
Game off, boys. Now that we live in a world of Obsidet and other aggressive black creatures that we hope are going to be good enough to have to fight, that is not kind of the extra bonus mode that Mongrel used to have in limited formats prior.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even in Cube, you know, go for the throat, you know, the non-conditional rule that don't, that just doesn't care.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah, you've named it. That was a bit of a tangent. I don't really remember how we got off on the side of Wild Mongrel, but...
Well, we were talking about that 3-3.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember how we brought up that guy either.
Skeleton Cube, though.
Skeleton Cube is the first topic that we... I worked long and hard over the weekend on this, because, again, I think the number one thing I get asked from people about Cube is, how do I get started? It's such an expensive barrier to get into. I don't necessarily know somebody in my playgroup already owns one. We're interested in doing it. How do we get started? And so, you know, many moons ago, back, actually published something back in the February of 2009. It was a Skeleton Cube list, which is really fun to look at. We may bring that up later on the show just to kind of see how far we've come. But we have a Skeleton Cube list that we've already put on the blog. So if you go to ekamon.blogspot.com,
and I'll put the link
which will link for the live components. Skeleton Cube, don't even try if you don't have fetch lands, shock lands, and ABU duels. Bam. That is kind of a over-the-top statement. I don't think that's 100% true. When I made the one in 2009, we only had 5 fetch lands, and we just used the Rab duels. We didn't use the original duels. But as we'll get into the building it and how much it would cost level of it, you will see that lands are still stupidly expensive.
Yes.
So, that being said, Ekwil, we'll wave goodbye to the live audience, because we're going to go to the spreadsheet mode here, briefly, and talk about the Skeleton Cube 2013 edition. Now, the Skeleton Cube is 360 cards. That means you have enough for 8 drafters drafting 3 packs of 15 at 45 cards. Yeah, there's no LD in it, which you may notice. LD is kind of a rich man's game.
Which is funny, because the red is by far the cheapest color.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves, but yes. So for white, black, and red, the breakdown is 25 creatures, 25 spells. For blue and green, we have the inverse, where it's 30 spells for green, 20 creatures... Sorry, 30 spells for blue, 20 creatures for blue, 30 creatures for green, 20 spells for green. If we come down into the more generic areas... multicolor or artifacts. We just have 40 artifacts. We're trying to keep the equipment to a minimum. I've talked in previous threads about a percentage of your artifacts that should be equipment. And that color palette really got out of control. That is a weird color. Mm. Multicolor cards. We just have 3 from each guild. There's no 3-color or 5-color or 4-color cards in there. And then finally on the lands, we just have 40 lands with an emphasis on mana fixing. Because, again, you want to be able to play your spells. You know, in a limited format, you want to have fun. And you can't have fun if you're not playing your spells. So for a Skeleton Cube, we really want everyone to be able to cast their stuff. So most of the lands are just there for fixing. We have the Tri-Lands from Shards. We have the Manlands from Worldwake. We have the Ravnica Duels. We have the 10 Sac Lands. And then under the Specialty Land side, we have 1 land from each individual color that's a special ability. Volrath Stronghold, Treetop Village, Caracas, Gitu Encampment, and Shelduck Isle. I do think you need to limit equipment. It can be important. If you just have too much equipment, it's just over the top. And when we get to the artifact section, we go section by section, we'll talk about how that kind of happened. So, that's kind of how you have it. The only other real limitations I put on it was I didn't want any cards that cost over $100 a piece, which wasn't too difficult, although... Again, I kind of tried to reference the 09 list a little bit more. Like, you could swap out Wimbriskites for Caracas to save money in that regard. I just love Caracas with Vendilion Click and...
Mangara, obviously.
Well, I don't think Mangara made the white side. There's no way he made the white side. It's just not enough guys.
Yeah.
So there are some other kind of edits you can make to make it cheaper. Again, I'm trying to reference the old list when a lot of these cards were a lot cheaper. It was a little awkward. So, you know, it was kind of that distinction where it's like, well, you gotta have Jace. But I don't think you have to have Tarmogoyf. So that was a conscious decision that was made for making the list.
How much is Jace these days?
He's $100.
Okay.
He's kind of
flatlined at 100?
No, he hasn't exactly flatlined. I mean, to talk about the finance side of Jace, Jace has gone beyond being a Magic card.
Yeah.
Jace is like... the it thing of Magic. Like, when casual players sit around and talk about Magic cards, it's like, Jace is so broken. It's so good. It's like this thing that, you know, we'll never get to play with. It's kind of like the Lotus of the 21st century of Magic. I'll come out and say it. I think that's that strong. Grafted Wardengar I could get behind. Sort of Body and Mind. Mill 10 is just not fun.
We intentionally had to cut the Mill 10 effects like Jace Memory Adept.
Yeah.
Sort of Body and Mind. Because they create really unfun, like, mini-games.
Yeah, I mean, in a little bit of the cube coverage I saw from the mocks last weekend, it was very clear that the game just devolved super fast when there was a Sort of Body and Mind involved. I think that there was one where it was like, oh, you know, your opponent's still at 8 life, he could get his way out of this, he just need to find an answer. It's like, oh no, he has one card left in his library, it's game over. It doesn't really matter. So, that's kind of... We limited the number of Planeswalkers. Planeswalkers also can just get expensive, or they can kind of like create too many subgames and have the game kind of devolve to being a subgames around them.
I also think, like, in a smaller cube, especially one that's balanced a little bit more around affordability, just by the nature of that, your power level is going to be lower.
Mm-hmm.
And Planeswalkers, you know, even in a powered cube, are some of the most powerful effects. So they can really run away with games if the power level of a lot of the other cards is gone. So in the efforts of kind of flattening out the power curve to some degree and making it a little more balanced and fun so games aren't super degenerate all the time.
Yeah, I'm kind of talking to the end of where power level is and power versus non-power. In the Skeleton Cube, it's definitely a no-power arena. The fast mana is definitely restricted, and we try to, you know, there's no Mana Vault, but there's Grim Monolith, there's no Moxes, no...
There's no Mana Vault.
No Mana Vault, no Mana Crypt, any of that kind of stuff. So again, this is a much more fair environment. I mean, sure, there is a DT, sure, there's a Mind Twist, sure, there's no Mana Drain. There is...
No.
But, so it's a much cleaner format. Well,
so let's just start right up, we got pulled up here, let's start with what we got in white.
So
you want to talk about what you're thinking?
So again, with only 360 cards and only 25 on each, you really need to make sure that there are draftable archetypes there. So you want to have a good number of aggressive white creatures. You want to make sure that you have utility guys that don't cost a million mana. But we want to support as many archetypes as possible. And I think the easiest way to just look at the spreadsheet and understand that is with something like Reanimator. Where it's like, well, we don't want a bunch of guys that cost a million mana, especially if there's so few creatures. Like, if I'm going to go to draft white, and there's six creatures that cost seven or more mana, I'm not just have no chance of being able to, you know, get enough guys to have a aggressive or even mid-range white deck. So,
right, if eight of your 25 white creatures are unplayable in at least half of the white decks, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. So, you know, we lose things like Iona. But we try to keep, you know, Elishnor, Angel Serenity, when they hit the board, they should be really good. And then there's Achroma as kind of that reanimator target where it's got protection from things. So that's just kind of the general outline if you look at white on the creature side. And this is a good example of just how each color kind of broke down. And then on the spell side, you want to have to make sure you have a few wraths, not too many wraths. You want to make sure you have token generators at the right casting costs and make sure that they're good.
Yeah, I remember when you originally sent me this list, one of the cards that was in it, because I was just looking at it kind of like, you know, put my own opinion on it or commentary, and one of the cards that was in the original list was White Sun Zenith. And I think that while that's a card that's fine in normal cube or in powered cube, because there's so much less, like, aggressive fast mana and, like, there's no Mana Vault, there's no Lotus, there's no... You're not going as huge with your artifact mana. It becomes a much worse spell in a fairer cube, you know? You'll be lucky to get two or three cats out of it tops, whereas, like, in Power Cube, a lot of times it's getting cast for four, five, even six.
I think when you bring the power level down, there are opportunities to have those more long-drawn-out control games. I don't think White Sun Zenith is just... an auto disinclude in a 360 skeleton card list, but I wanted more versatility, so we ended up changing it to Increasing Devotion. A control deck can still get a lot of power out of Increasing Devotion, but an aggressive deck, it can be that top end. It can do a lot over there as well. Okay. So, yeah, that's kind of the philosophies that go into white and the explanation there.
Let's now, move on to...
Before we just break color by color, I do want to talk about when building a cube, costs are prohibitive.
Yes,
and
that is the biggest hurdle.
Again, when I started cubing, I went through my collection, and I ended up with a stack of cards on my desk that was probably half to two-thirds of the way there. And then it was, like, this fun little sub-game where it's like, okay, well, now we go to FNM, let's, like, trade for this stuff, or let's, you know, rally our forces and find the things we need to put this thing together, and then, you know, make one last final order from Troll and Toad and get everything we need. So for a lot of people who are starting, that system really works. You know, when I started Cube, there weren't that many resources out there to draw from, but I took a list, I kind of edited a little bit for what I wanted, and then I just got to have a little checklist, and it was like a little game for a few weeks where we were going around to Magic events and stores and finding stuff before we actually got to play with it. That being said, it's still not super cheap. And I wanted to know, you know, again, kind of having that ceiling, that $100 ceiling, how much it would cost to build this thing today if you own no Magic cards. So I went ahead, did the math, put it all together. If everyone out there wants to make a guess, everyone in the live chats, we can have some interesting...
We'll take your guesses now, if you would like to.
Yeah, if you would think how much it would cost to put together a skeleton cube. Now remember, nothing over $100. Jace is the most expensive card, maybe Caracas. There's no original dual lands. There are all of the fetch lands, which I was kind of surprised to see how much they've inflated so much there. But you've got Ravduels, which are nice and low right now, since they're everywhere. But any guesses from the chat window? We have an even 2,000. We have a bet of even 2,000.
Looks like we have a lot of people attempting to bid and failing somehow.
Not really bidding. I guess you're guessing.
Oh, the chat blocks dollar signs?
Oh, okay. Well, don't use dollar signs. Or, yeah. You know, you could guess in yen. I can convert that.
Canadian dollars. Gallons of maple syrup. We got 600, 1,600.
1,600, 1,500. So we have 2,000, 1,600. What is it? 600, 600 and 1,500.
1,500.
And a lot of chat block type info.
Yeah. Okay.
Or Canadian. We're going to have a bet in Canadian dollars as well. That was a bid. All
right.
So in reality.
$1. We're going Price is Right style.
Ah, Price is Right style. I like it. Unfortunately, you will not win anything. With a correct guess.
I like the strategy behind it.
Yo, I applaud the strategy, the $1 strategy. Okay.
So
let's move over to skeleton list cube totals.
Drumroll, please.
I'm surprised by this. If you were to buy all of these cards, again, these are English near mint. Now, it's just the lowest version, you know, if let's say it's Urza's Rage from Invasion versus Urza's Rage from Phyrexia versus Coalition, right. And that one is, you know, $1.50 as opposed to $2 for the Invasion one. It comes out to just under $2,700, which is a bit of a surprise to me as I was calculating it, putting it all together.
Now, again, these are for near mint prices, though, so you could theoretically try and, like, track down...
Well, yeah, again, I kind of had to have a jumping point somewhere. I couldn't be like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to go around to dealers and websites, and I'm only going to buy all their HP stuff
right.
Just so I can have it. You know, with that kind of thing, it's almost like that, why don't you just print it off a printer? I don't really know. So, again, if you were to show up with nothing but cash in hand to try to build this skeleton list we're putting up today, it would cost you $2,683.50. Thank God the shipping's free.
Also, big shout out to Red for keeping the total price down as much as possible.
Yeah.
They're really bringing the averages down.
And Eat a Dick Lands.
Yeah.
While only being 40 of the 360 cards in cube,
you are
accumulating for more than 27% of the entire price to put this thing together.
So, but I think that, you know, the land section is the one with the most redundancy in terms of, like, you could play, like, say, the M10 duels instead of other things. Or you could, like there's a lot more, like, wiggle room in terms of
Yeah, I mean, you lose a bit of an integrity with the fetch lands and the dual lands if you lose those. Losing the tri lands. Like, I tried to find most of the really cheap stuff. Granted, you know, you could make a quick Caracas swap. You could turn a $100 card into, like, a $2 card and actually, with Battalion, I think Windrisk Heights is more than that nowadays. But
yeah.
You can cut some corners here. My point is that it's still, you know, it can be expensive to come from nowhere. So I really enjoyed the scavenger hunt part when we first built the cube and put everything together.
Yeah.
And this was just a bit of a shocker number. I felt like I had to share how much this really was. Because I was surprised at the end of the day.
Yeah. So everybody hit the casino gaming tables now. You know,
only Eck could endorse that, as he is one of the few people I've ever seen to hit a bad beat jackpot in my entire life.
That's true.
The only one I was ever at the same table for.
I know, you're welcome. All right, so back to the official list. Let's move on to blue here.
I don't really... So creatures are really hard in blue already. And blue is hardest color for cube in general, because you want to play with so many sweet cards and you don't get to. Figure out which finishers you wanted was really difficult. Figure out like what creatures you wanted was really hard. Again, there's no chance of having any kind of aggressive stuff.
I really like that Lone Revenant made the cut.
Yeah, I felt like that was really important to have, because with all these blue control decks that are just strictly control decks, having a hexproof guy to be able to win the game with...
That guy's just awesome.
I don't know if I'd go as far as awesome.
I love that guy.
I mean, he's not a hot dog, but he's still really good. So yeah, he made the list. I mean, there's a good number of clones. The three drops in blue are really key to kind of keep pressure off of you with Kel'Thuzite Snapper, Fettergeist, and Serendip Efreet. And thanks Serendip Efreet for being printed and revised to really help us out. There's a Tinker in there. You can't have a cube without a Tinker. That's why you have to have Inkwell Leviathan.
And he's a good reanimator.
He's pretty good to reanimator, yeah. He's
serving double duty.
Which is important, because, again, you don't want... In a skeleton cube like this, you don't want outliers. You don't want niche cards. You don't want corner cards. And, again, one of the bonuses of the skeleton list is, as you slowly expand upon it and add things to it, you get to farm out those other strategies. But initially, you're going to want to have the very core of the colors, the very primal, almost, things that they do. And that's going to be real important when we get to the You Make the Card portion and talking about the wheel and where things are important. I haven't had good experiences with Lone Revenant. Props if the guy does work. He does work. And on the spell side, keeping in line with that is really key as well. I am a little disappointed we didn't get to add things like Spell Pierce, because there just isn't room. But being able to stay in the game early as the Blue Mage is important. So you want the Condescends, the Force Spikes, the Dazes, the Repeals, those kind of things is really important. Oh, I need to move Ancestral Vision down to 0 CMC.
Typo. The thing about blue is, like, blue spells are so good, like, you could just pick 30 of them almost out of a hat, it seems like.
As long as they have the right CMC.
Yeah. Like, as long as you have the curve okay, like, it's fine.
I mean, it's another example of why blue will never be an aggressive color in cube, because look at the breakdown of its creatures. Yeah. It's kind of like little chunks of 2, 3, 4, 5s. It's not really like a flow.
Also, like, 2 power across the board here, like... Glenland Archmage, Vitzer, your 4 and 5 mana, 2 power guys.
Yeah, lay off. They're so tricky. Blue is so tricky. You can do whatever it wants.
Alright, so black.
And now, coming into black, those that are more familiar with the cube that we run, you will notice the lack of land destruction here. Tier. But you will notice the reintegration of the hybrid mana color cards into a particular color, so you get a bit of a cheat there. You know, you get Deathrite Shaman in the black side, but it gives you a little more workaround. So black seems like all of these are pretty explanatory to themselves, but you've got your aggressive zombies, you've got some really big... You've got the 187 creatures, which are really key. You really need those.
Black puts together a pretty sweet Living Death deck in this list.
Yeah, you know... The more I was crafting the Skeleton Cube, the more I kind of wanted us to just take the cube, pare it down to the Skeleton Cube, and run it for a little while, just so we could make sure that not only is everything just, you know, hunky-dory, but to kind of see how different things are and how they play out. Because I think that would be a lot of fun. And again, as cube builders and cube owners, you have that opportunity to kind of just, you know, mess with your own world and kind of create sub-games and sub-cubes in your cube.
Like, you know, I mean, I see plenty of lists that go... You know, on black, you know, go like the heavy, like Swamps Matter, and like the heavier, you know, Death Cloud and Mutilate, and, you know, the stuff that's really like mono black cards. And like a lot of people really like those, other people hate them, you know. But that's the nice thing, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, and we stayed away from a lot of that triple black action. I mean, you know, there's a Grawl's Messenger. There's no Necro. There's no Sinkhole, you know. We do have, there's no Hymn to Torak either, which might be a bit of a crime.
Yeah, that's got to be a mistake.
Is that a typo?
That's probably a typo.
Also not, you know, black is the first color to not kind of max out on its planeswalkers either.
Yeah.
There's just a lily.
Which is, like, one of the best planeswalkers, though.
Yeah. No, I mean,
has the problem of most of its planeswalkers being god-awful.
Right, and I think that's a conversation for another day. There are people out there that are huge fans of Liliana Vess, and I am not one of those people.
Ugh. So slow.
Him could be in there. Bone Shredder, I'm kind of indifferent towards, because we've got Necrotal, Skin Render, Predatory Nightstalker, and Shriekmaw already, and we already had three casting cost creatures that I thought were important. Something like Stronghold Rats kind of brings a different angle and a different kind of tool to black that just having another Bone Shredder wouldn't have done. So I felt that was important.
Yeah. I mean, and black still got its aggressive stuff, you know, it seems fine.
Let's go over to red, then. Also known as the cheap or poor man's color in cube.
So, red's, I mean, pretty standard looking.
Did you just close the Twitch window?
No, it's fine.
Okay. I just didn't. Relax. We lost our chat with it. Yeah, red is another. It seems like it's very easy to construct in a skeleton cube, but at the same time, I think it can be very difficult because there are so many small guys you want to put in the cube, and so many kind of top-end 4 or 5 mana guys you want to put in the cube, and you have to be very picky about how much of each you have. So you got, you know, your figure, your Goblin Guy, your Jackal Pup, you've got your Chainwalker, Kargan Dragon Lord, you know, Lightning Mauler action going on. And then you've got Kiki Jiki, Siege Gang, Zealous Conscripts, Thundermaw Hellkite, which are all very key. So kind of fitting in the middles there. And fours are also really huge for red, as we've talked about before. Those colors can go real deep on the things that they can do. So. And then you want a bunch of burn spells on the spell side, but you add up a little bit of diversity with Jockle Hops, Wildfire, and Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to have, you know, kind of the big red deck as in addition to the little red deck, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you got the Greater Gargadon in there as the last kind of like big CC creature in red. There's not room for Begotten Hellkites.
No. And in chat, someone's saying there's a bunch of red 2-drops that we're missing. I feel like, I mean, there's a bunch of everything that's good that we're missing.
Oh, yeah. Red's creatures are very strong.
I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, we're like, it, you just have to make tough decisions because we're so limited in space.
And that's really why our cube isn't 360 cards and it's 700 cards, because we like playing with...
We want to play all the stuff.
All of the things. There are 360 cards in the Skeleton Cube, just as a refresher.
So
let's come on down to green. Now, green was a bit of a tough one, because green is where you want all those CMC 7 or more creatures. You hit big, because you want to play Tooth and Nail, you want to play Natural Order, you want there to be that fun, big stuff that you can just jam out there and have fun with, but at the same time, by adding all of those into your cube, there's not a lot of room for everything else at the bottom. No Yosai.
No
Yosai. That's a white card. We've long past white. So again, with green, it's tough. You want all that big stuff. You want plenty of one casting cost ramp guys. And there's a lot of tools, you know, again with the 4-drop. Just like red, there's so many utility things you can do with green at the 4 spot. You got the Hasted Vengevine, you've got the card advantage Oracle Moldiah, you have the life-gaining Opsin Baloth, which is really important because there's so fewer opportunities to have life-gain effects against the red decks in a Skeleton Cube.
And you have one of my favorite dudes, Master of the Wild Hunt.
Master of the Wild Hunt, that card.
Love that guy.
For some reason, Eck always drafts decks that card just beats up on.
Yeah.
So you need to draft it. I mean, I think X drafts, anytime he sees a Batterskull or a Master of the Wild Hunt, he just has to take them.
Those cards have my number. And if it's wearing... If a Master of the Wild Hunt is wearing a Batterskull...
You've already scooped. It's game over. Don't even go there.
But I mean, like...
Well, no Kadama's Reach because we have Cultivate. You only have room for one.
Yeah, you don't necessarily need the same level of redundancy because the cube is smaller. I mean, this is a 360-card list. If you have an 8-man draft, all of these cards are going to see play in every single draft. Like, it uses exactly all of them. So, you don't necessarily need the same level of redundancy. that you do for, like, say, a 700.
Exactly. I didn't want to double up on effects that were exactly the same. For example, like, we could have put in Finnhorn Elves, but we didn't, because it would just be another Llanowar Elves. And in a 360-card cube, there's no reason to have that redundancy. There's no effect that is so key for a color. It has to happen twice. And, you know, cubes all... To me, it's still about the one-ofs. It's about the unique experiences.
Yeah. Like, functional reprints are...
And Cultivate is just straight-up cheaper than Kadama's Reach, so... There's that to factor in as
right,
well.
Right, save 7 cents or whatever.
Like on Greens, Planeswalkers. First of all, there's only 20 spells. 3 of those 20 spells are Garrick's.
Yeah. He's occupying a pretty large percentage of green.
Greens, again, you know, I don't know how self-explanatory or not self-explanatory these things may or may not feel, but we're just trying to take that 700 card list, size it down proportionally, and still have a lot of the same feelings. So, yeah. And we like Tooth and Nail, we like Natural. We want
got Pollinar in there, which I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
So, artifacts.
The Deadbridge Goliath has been great for us. I love Deadbridge Goliath. I think that's exactly the kind of effect that green needs and wants. Coming back to the Colonian Tusker, Wild Mongrel, Green's color identity conversation, I think it's really important to... give them nice big Juzambijin style fatties that also do other things. And I think in the design of the... What's the name of that mechanic?
Scavenge.
Scavenge mechanic. It's very key.
Like, so, it's kind of like a... It's like virtual green card advantage.
Exactly.
Like, you have, like, this 5/5/4, which is already pretty good, and then, like, it turns into, like, a late game...
All of a sudden, your Llanowar Elf is a 6/6.
Yeah, like it's very good.
It's kind of like it has on Earth. It's kind of like it has something very similar. Or you can go real deep on it. In the 700 card cube, you can put it on a Spike Weaver against a white red opponent or whatever. WTF? No Primeval Titan? You mean the worst Titan?
Yeah, I mean
who's gonna in this cube would be searching for the most underwhelming lands ever?
Yeah, like. Primeval Titan hasn't been in our cube in a long time, intentionally, because it doesn't do anything sweet.
Second worst Titan? Still.
Second worst.
Question mark?
What Titan is worse than Primeval?
I would imagine the argument would be to Frost Titan, but I don't know if that's a very good argument.
It's like blue removal.
Yeah, it's also like in the color that's the most protected.
Frost Titan is sweet. I disagree with Kenny on this.
I don't want to use extremes like Swede and Garbage. I will say that Frost Titan is an excellent role player, and as much, I think for a really long time, we only ran white, red, black in cube for Titans. Eventually I came around to blue, and I saw more of how it fit into the color than looking it in a vacuum and evaluating its power level, mm-hmm. and that's why it's still in the cube and does really well when you cast it. There are very few games, and the Moto Cube's a little bit different, it's really good in the Moto Cube, but in our cube, laying that guy down is very good. I mean, I think, you know, bringing the conversation back to just Primeval Titan in general, step one, have really good lands in your deck. Step two, don't draw them. Draw Primeval Titan. Step three, cast Primeval Titan. Have it...
resolve.
Search for lands that do really good stuff. Step four... profit?
Like, it's so much harder to get immediate value other than just the ramp effect out of Primeval Titan. Like, there's just, you know, there's not, like, you can't make Valakut work in cube. You know, you can't... And in this list, there's not even, like, Barbarian Ring.
In the Skeleton Cube list, there is not Barbarian
Ring.
Right, so it's... But, you know, like, in the 700 card cube, there's a lot of utility. You know, as we add the, Zendikar Dark Ascension, as we have kind of slowly integrated more of those, especially the green-based ones, there was a time where I had Grim Backwoods in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There are better cards. And, you know, getting a Wolf Run, getting a Township with Titan is a huge game. So, you know, those do things, but I just it doesn't happen enough for me.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it just... With the lands that are currently in queue, I would never be, like, super stoked to go get two of them to base expanded for. Like, Primeval Titan to me is, like, a 6/6 with Trample that gets you some mana, which is okay. Like, he's mostly just a 6-6 trample, which is fine, but it's not, like, something that I'm really writing home about.
Moving, can anyone link me to the list? That's probably the last thing you copy-pasted, right, Eck? You can just put that back in there?
I hope so.
Sorry, that or, like, an Eck dick pic. Right. There we go. Okay. Moving down to artifacts, which, looking at the artifact section will help explain why the Eldrazi are in cube, outside of the fact you can tooth and nail for them. Wait, is there a Raphelos in green? I think yes. We put a Raphelos. Yeah, okay. That was one of the more expensive cards that I didn't really want to include, but I was like, it's too good not to include.
It's too good. Yeah.
So we have... You have Hated Beast with it? How could you hate Beast with it? It kills everything.
Kenny's got some weird opinions on...
Kenny plays with people in Reno. Apparently he just runs over them all day with Tanglewire.
Yeah. No, I mean, who doesn't Tanglewire run over?
I don't know, but I know that Beast Withinning my Tanglewire when it's about to die feels pretty good.
Oh, that's dirty. Alright, so artifact section...
So we talked about briefly about the percentage on equipment, not having Sword of Body in mind. It even feels kind of dirty in the Skeleton Cube to have the other four swords. They feel like they're just taking up valuable space.
But they're so good. All of them are... Like, the only one that I could see... Like, I could see cutting Light and Shadow, maybe.
I could see cutting Light and Shadow.
I could see maybe cutting War and Peace.
Oh, yeah, there are so few life gain effects, and there are so few pro-red effects in a Skeleton Cube. I think War and Peace is pretty important.
Yeah. But, like, Fire Eyes and Feast of Famine are just so insane.
Yeah, they're not so, yeah. Yeah. And obviously all the cards are good. They're in a 360-card cube.
Yeah. So there's a lot of... We got a lot of mana rocks.
We've got a lot of the two mana rocks, the... I think pretty much all of them. I didn't really skimp on the two mana ones. The three mana ones, we went for the two big fixers with Coalition Relic and Chromatic Lantern. And we have the Basalt Monolith and Thran Dynamo kind of combo to get big for when people want to get big. Which I think is really cool and pretty key. I think there are definitely some hidden gems in the artifacts section. Oh, no Signets. No Signets. Signets make magic no fun. Especially when we're talking about trying to ever cast two and three drops ever. I think cards like Precursor Golem and Masticore are grossly underrated in what they actually do in cube. And they are very good. So
I will agree with one of those. But not both.
And you are going to agree... With the non-crowd favorite. I think Eck would rather have a Masticore in his deck than a Precursor Golem.
100% of the time.
You're just getting blown out with your Precursor Golem too many times.
You know, it's one of those, like, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, like, 18 times. Like, you don't get fooled again.
You've had a bad 30-day run with Precursor Golem.
I've had a bad, like, 30-month run. That card has never been good.
If you... be real, son. If you were playing it for that long and it wasn't working for you, you wouldn't put it in your deck. You wouldn't be drafting it.
The problem with Signets... So, there's a question in chat about Signets being the scapegoat for what's wrong with Magic. It's not that Signets are what's wrong with Magic. The problem with Signets is that what they're intended to do and what they actually do in a cube setting are completely different. What happens in cube settings is that everyone just takes every Signet the moment they see it, regardless of what the colors they end up playing. So every color has everyone has access to a boatload of two mana rocks that might occasionally also fix them. So it really makes green way worse because green's fixing becomes less relevant.
And you don't even have to target green so much as being the, you know, the bitch that's taking it. You can say every mid-range to aggressive deck that now has to have their two and three drops immediately outclassed. And every blue deck that I would draft when Signets were in the cube, I would snap up, Celestial Signet, Boros Signet, Golgari Signet, they're all mine. Yeah. And it doesn't matter what colors I'm playing, because it's like, I'm going to get the Sphinx of Droyal, Consecrated Sphinx faster. I'm going to have those. And sure, like, you curved out beautifully and you went 2-3-4, but it's like, I'm going to, like, wrath you on three now, and then I'm going to hit this, you know, 5-5 winning Shroud guy super early.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, Signet's just... Like, they look cool, they look like mana fixing, but in reality, they're just kind of like this lame thing that devalues
three drops. And I just want to be clear, I'm not saying it makes green bad. I'm saying that it makes aggressive strategies worse. And I don't think you can argue that. Okay. Back on the artifact side, I was also sad to have to include Jite because it's, like, stupidly expensive.
Still?
Yeah, a year,
for Christ's sake.
It's not about the pre-cons, it's about the year of Grand Prix promos.
Yeah.
You know how many of those things we went through at Grand Prix promos? I was like, oh, yeah, it'll... Whatever. Anyway. So, that's Artifacts. Feel pretty good about that one. Down to Multicolor.
Multicolor, again, I feel, is where the maximum amount of debate comes in because the sections are so small.
Right. It's kind of like the pick your favorites.
Like, you only get three of each. So... Like, they're all going to be good, but it's really,
except for Blue Black, who has Shadow Mage Infiltrator chilling there.
Hey, he's fine. I love Shadow Mage.
Of these 30 cards, Shadow Mage Infiltrator is clearly the worst card.
That is not true. It's probably Simic Sky Swallower.
Tell me more, Ak. Why don't you like Simic Sky Swallower?
He's just really redundant.
How?
There are so many giant 7-drop kind of finishers like that. I don't actually agree with Simic Sky Swallower taking that slot, especially because it's so tight. It's already so tight.
Blue-green is toit. Don't get me wrong. It's very toit. Like, what is that? The blue-blue, black-black guy that can clone things? He has Hexproof? That's the Lavars guy? He's all right, but he's blue-blue, black-black.
That is that is a tall order.
I mean, blue decks like lots of blue mana. Black decks like lots of black mana. If you were to make a Skeleton Cube, cut some expensive fetch lands maybe and run like the Shadowmoor filters, I'd be a little more inclined to play that guy.
Again, I think that, the idea behind this list is that this is a jumping off point. If you want a cube and you don't know where to start, this is a good place to start. However, because it's it's ostensibly your cube, you can do whatever you want with it.
Whoa, someone's saying Bit Blast is the worst card? Whoa! Oh, I don't think that's close.
I need to lay down now.
There was a time, kids, where cascading was ridiculous. Void Slime might be the fringe worst, but that's not the point. The point is that these cards in these two color combinations, they kind of encapsulate what the colors want to do. The two color combinations, and they're very powerful. I feel like the ones that we picked to represent the multicolor cards here in Cube, for the Skeleton Cube, were very key at that. It feels a little gross on black-green that it's like, kill stuff slightly faster, kill all the stuff!
Yeah,
But that's what it does.
Yeah, I mean, but again, you could really, if you wanted to, say, make black-green more aggressive in your own version of this, you could easily just go... Take two of those cards out and put in Lalteth Troll and Putrid Leech.
Yeah.
Or, switch out,
It's funny to me, because the fourth card I would add to Black Green, if we were to expand this color card, this combination by 10 cards...
Nebraska?
Oh, no, it'd be Abrupt Decay.
Oh, yeah. Black Green's redundancy in that is very funny. But, you can go a lot of different ways. If you want more discard, you could put Gerard's Verdict in White-Black instead of... A different card.
That's I forgot. We've been kicking around that card.
Or Tidehouse Scholar, even. Or just if
I gotta go back and reference that list of things that we may be changing for the next update, because I don't remember if Jared's Verdict is on there.
We'll have to sit down and
hammer that. I have a pretty good list coming together. Yeah. Got some cool stuff coming up. I think we might want to put Bizarre Baghdad in. I think it might be time.
Oh, that's bold.
I don't know. Our friends at. Our friends at East West Draftcast are all about that card.
Huh. Interesting.
I mean, and as the Oath/Oversight... This is kind of safe for another time. But let us move on past Multicolor. We'll go down to the bottom. So we have the lands, which is obviously the most controversial portion, because, if you go back to the totals side, it costs so effing much to put lands in your cube. Can't we just play with Mirage, dual lands, and...
And M10 buddies. And
invasion tap lands.
M10 buddy lands.
Mirage, I think it was Nationals 2002. I bought a bunch of Japanese invasion tap lands. Thinking I will need these. And then they were put in 8th edition or whatever, or 9th, whatever core set.
Yeah.
We lost pain lands and got those POSs.
This is 8th.
And I was like, okay, well, this will work for me.
You could
play Panoramas, too.
You could play Mirage. You could play Mirage, Sacklands. You could play the M10 Buddy Lands. I think you could get away with those. You could play,
So, when building the cube list and talking about how expensive it is, if you were to just...
You want to go real deep, you could play the Odyssey Block Filter Lands.
That isn't so much deep as it is terrible.
Yeah. But it's also deep. Deepwater Catacombs.
So this is the section with the most flexibility, obviously. To me, it's about mana fixing, how much you offer it, what other things you offer it in lands, how you value it. Again, if you want, if you're the guy who's sitting at home today thinking like, you know what, I want to do this. I want to be the guy that comes to FNM, comes to our weekend events, when we scrub out of PTQs, nothing ever happens. You can all get together and draft this thing. I want to be the guy to champion it. Mana fixing can be very important for people having fun with your cube because they want to cast their spells, and if they can't cast their spells, they're not going to want to do it again, and they're not going to buy you a hamburger afterwards for bringing the cube. That being said, I like this shell because this shell has the most fixing for mana that isn't, you know, $2,000 worth of fixing.
Right.
You've got the tricolor lands, you've got the man lands that are, you know, easy to buy, are two colors, and can be win conditions.
All the man lands are good.
Oh, obviously. I mean, all these cards are good. You got the Ravnica lands that are really cheap to pick up right now. The specialty land side, I really like. This 10 is an excellent kind of series of cards that give you options for what the colors do. Yes, you could put in Windrush Heights over Caracas and save a lot of money there as well. But that's, I mean, like the mana, you know, Mana Denial in the form of Rashad and Port Strip Mine and Wasteland. You could take all those cards out if you wanted to make sure people could still be casting all their spells. You could swap out a lot of the expensive stuff and just put in Panoramas. But that's how I like it. Let me go back to the us side, since we've kind of gone through the whole spreadsheet at this point. Well, Windrisk might be a better card. In a 360-card environment where you're going to get those token generators all the time,
it might be better.
It might be better, yeah.
But at the same time, like, if you take the Caracas, you're probably going to be on the lookout for all the sweet legends to play with it. Venserv and Billion Click.
I have definitely played... I played a blue-black control deck with a Caracas in it not that long ago. Didn't have any white spells or white cards in it. Main deck did, because I wasn't that deep on, like, the Cryptic Commands slash Necros. And then I played against a guy who, like, hearted up a Chroma, and I just kept shipping it back to his hand.
Yeah. You take that back.
Okay.
So... what else do you want to talk about?
Well, there you have it. I mean, there's a skeleton cube. For everyone that asks out there, you know, where do I start? What would I build? What would it look like? I like this list a lot. We spent a lot of time on it. And it is now forever on the blog. You can find it. It is there for you. Reference it. Talk about it. We will probably make a few changes to it based on the feedback we've gotten here. Try to bring that overall cost down for people so that, again, if you were to just be like tomorrow... here.
I'll take one cube, please.
That includes storage, sleeves, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think one quick tangent we can take that we hadn't originally planned for is we can talk about the other M14 spoilers. Since we talked about the Colonian Tusker,
yes.
I think we could talk about a guy that I wanted to save for more talk about the graveyard, which I think is an important topic for a very soon and future show, which kind of leads into the Black's identity, what we're going to do with Black. But... all those things being said, we're going to take a look at the Shadowborn Demon from currently just Duels. If you go to Reddit, you can probably just get the image file.
Yeah.
Heck's going to do this the long way.
I'll pull it up slowly here. But, yeah, there we go.
Good enough.
There Shadowborn go. Demon.
You can zoom in on that guy a little bit. So, we already have a 5/6 flying for a 5. We all know math. That's not hard. That card's spectacular. It's also a Necrotal. Actually, it's better than a Necrotal because it can kill a bunch of black stuff when it comes into the play. It has Trample. Even sweeter. The only downside we had to look at here...
he doesn't have Trample. What are you talking about?
Oh, sorry. He doesn't have Trample? No, he doesn't have Trample. He doesn't need Trample. It's true. He doesn't need Trample.
No.
And the downside being, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have fewer than 6 creature cards in your graveyard, you have to sacrifice a guy.
So this guy seems sweet.
He seems boss.
Like, he's a Necrotal, but also a win condition. Like, it's pretty hard to win the game with, like, Necrotal by his Lonesome, or, like, even Shriekmaw. Like, this guy is going to do the whole job by himself. He's very aggressively costed. He lives through a lot of stuff. Like, he's going to get smoked by, like, Go for the Throat, but having 5 toughness makes red pretty much... it makes it impossible to kill with red spells.
You could call him the Black Slayer.
Yeah. Although Black Slayer this cannot kill Bane Slayer.
We've all lived through Halo Hunter. It's okay.
And the drawback on it is something that is very easily, I wouldn't say easy, but it's something that's very doable.
Well, we're talking about Cube here, so what we want is to not have it be a drawback, we want to have it be an enabler. Look, I could, you know, lay a Cab Director on 4 mana, lay this guy on 5 mana, and then whoop, 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 whoop!
Sure, I mean...
obviously Gravecrawler, Bloodghast, even maybe like Vengevine's a bit excessive. But there are plenty of ways to turn the downside into an upside, or at least a manageable side.
Right.
And with the cube that we have right now, really trying to use the graveyard with ways of Oversold Cemetery, Oath of Ghouls.
Yes, I was about to say.
And we want to farm that out more, because I really think that's where Black's future is as being a powerhouse. You know, Pox works in one way. Contamination is a real dick move. But I think, you know, really manipulating that graveyard. That's why, you know, in future updates, I really want to add cards like Probe. Because blue is obviously... we do not currently play Buried Alive. I think we need some more tools. I think that card's just a little too linear as it stands right now. You know, maybe if we added Necrotal... Or sorry, Icarid. I don't know why I said Necrotal. If we add Icarid, if we add... Nether Trader, Ashen Ghoul...
If there were more zombies, where Gravecrawler would be better...
Yeah, I mean, we probably
get, like, Gravecrawler and some other stuff.
Probably, well, I mean, just, like, in Buried Alive for Gravecrawler Bloodghast.
Right. But you need some zombies to get Gravecrawler back going. That's the one biggest problem with Gravecrawler is that, like, a lot of times that line of text is a lie, because you don't have any other zombies, because there's just not a ton of them in the cube right now. That's something I always try and, like, keep in mind, is, like, trying to bump up the zombie count. Like,
yeah, we should probably bring back Graveborn Muse.
Like the vampire count when Nocturnus was in.
Right.
So
there you have it. Shadowborn Demon. He's going in for sure.
Do you want to talk You Make the Card?
We do want to talk You Make the Card. Is there any other... talking about the new set spoilers, talking about the Dragon's Maid spoilers...
There's a couple other cards.
We're talking about the Dragon's Maid spoiler without really even trying to talk about it. Obviously, Maze's End isn't really going to do anything for us.
No.
So... swing and a miss there.
So we've got
You Make the Card.
We've got enchantment.
So yeah,
locked in.
We didn't get land.
Thank God.
We didn't get creature. Was really what we wanted.
Yeah.
But we did get enchantment, and enchantment is kind of the broadest You Make the Card possibly ever. I mean, technically, you know, with artifact,
yeah.
There's a lot you can do there, but artifacts can also kind of adjust the rules like an enchantment can. But, again, think about an enchantment as any card that can kind of just change the rules of the game. If you've ever played Flux, or if you've ever played games of that nature, where just simply having a card on the table can be as broad in its abilities to change the game as possible, or as narrow, we could end up making an aura. We could end up making a card that's some kind of new... Not curse, not control magic, who knows? Again, the sky's really the limit here. So I don't feel like so much like Team Creature Lost, because again, you know, when we first talked about You Make the Card and its impact on Cube, we were looking for a sweet black creature.
I'm surprised that Creature didn't win, or at least tie. I was really surprised when it was land and enchantment, because I felt like if those were the two, those were like, in my head, like the two kind of bottom tier options, or at least what I thought people would vote.
Really? I think instant sorcery to me felt like the least likely to get votes.
Really?
Commander players, man. They rule the world. They put money into Magic. They play the most Magic outside of the intense tournament players. People like you and I who cube all the time to shame.
Don't they want like a sweet like EDH legend?
Sure.
Like, why don't they vote creature?
Because they already print new commander sets like every year now.
I don't know.
And there was just talk about how the design functionality of legendary creatures has shifted almost towards Commander because of Planeswalkers and how Planeswalkers have taken over the role of what legendary creatures used to be.
Yeah.
So, all those things being said, we get to make an enchantment. I think we still want to make a black enchantment.
I think so, too. I think that black is the color I feel like we've been working on and tinkering with the most recently. And
as all cube builders and cube players have been, they want more for black. They really want help identifying it, bringing it powerful cards, and helping black do something in the 21st century. You know, was black in Magic in the 20th century was too dominant. It was too good.
Black Summer, baby.
Yeah. Y'all want another sulfuric vortex? That'd be greedy. We can make a black sulfuric vortex.
Just make it lose life instead.
And you can just go real deep. Like, every player's upkeep, that player loses two life and puts, like, two zombies into play. Or one zombie. So I got a reverse call from the grave, but also with sulfuric vortex on top of it.
I mean, I think, like, a cool... Like, I think black is the color that gets the most... It's the most up in the air in terms of, like, any cube list you look at. Mostly, like, you're going to find very similar blue cards, very similar white, red, you know, green cards. Black is going to be the most different because people have, you know, completely, vastly different takes what's good in black. And I think that it's really interesting to try and figure out, like, is the super heavy mono black plan better? Is the Pox plan better? Is trying to play graveyard? You know, there are so many different ways you can go with it. And because black in cube has been kind of underpowered for a while, people are really desperate to try and figure out, like, something that works.
Yeah. Again, I think that you see the most kind of deviation in black because people are trying so hard to find out what's good for it. I mean, I think, you know, we all know why blue is good in cube. We don't need to... It's like, oh, I instituted a sweet cephalid strategy into my cube to help blue out.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Abocean and friends?
I put Merfolk in.
Yeah. Well, that, like, halfway makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, fish are strong.
But, like, so I would really like to see it be black, and I would really like to see it be some form of... some kind of, like, an engine kind of piece. Ideally, something that works with the graveyard.
So, yes, that was, you know, it kind of flowed into a topic that might be its own show. We might be able to get it all in today, because we've only used just over an hour. Yeah, a black enchantment that does something for us to help us out with the graveyard. Now, obviously we can't print another Oversold Cemetery or Oath, because...
What if it's just, like, I mean, like, at the simplest level, black and one, during your upkeep, you can search your library for a creature card and put that card into your graveyard. Is that too good?
I don't know. Like, we all know Entomb is too good. And that's like that's a one-mana tutor. And this is kind of a two-mana tutor.
But
it's a delayed effect because it's an enchantment.
But you get to do it. You get to do it multiple times.
Yeah. That could be good.
As opposed to being any card, I would just say creatures just because, like, it seems more black thematically. Like, you know, it's a cemetery or a graveyard or something. You know, there's a bunch of bodies lying around, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, my mind initially kind of thought, you know, even with the most recent spoiler card that we got, where it's like, oh, we could have something that's like, when it enters the battlefield, each player can search their library for any of the creature cards and put them into the graveyard.
I mean, I don't know. Like, that, like...
Talk about a card that we've never seen, Sam. Who knows?
I mean, I don't think making it...
Second draw a card!
Like, I think that defeats the purpose of it being an enchantment. I think having a persistent effect is, like, what they're going to want us to make, or what they're going to, like, guide, like, the design around, is, like, trying to have... Either it's an aura, or if it's a permanent, you know, non-aura enchantment, it's going to be, like, some kind of, you know, thing where you do something every turn, or it's a permanent change on the game, you know, like Knight of Souls Betrayal or something. You know, maybe not that, but...
That would be good. Maybe another Knight of Souls Betrayal would be awesome.
They cost, like, three. Just cost a triple black.
Does that have to be legendary? I mean, for our...
purposes, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. The triple black Knight of Souls Betrayal? I mean, I guess we could also be really greedy and ask for it to be a triple black all non-black creatures.
Yeah, that would be very...
Like a reverse Crusade?
Yeah.
Or a reverse Bad Moon?
I mean...
But again, like, the point that I'm really trying to get at is that with enchantment, the sky is the limit, the spectrum is the most broad, our opportunity to do something with power level is the most that's there. I mean, just think about, like, Demonic Uprising that we saw recently from Amazon Restored.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to just kind of go to the you-make-the-card thing, and that was what you came up with, that's a pretty radical notion of things you can do with magic cards, let alone black enchantments, and that's really cool. Like, it's not really aggressively cube-costed or...
No, but, like,
where we want to be, but, yeah.
The idea is sound. And I think that, you know, there's just a million different ways you can go with it.
And enchantments are permanents. They can be sacked for effects.
It'll be interesting to see how this goes down. I mean, especially because, you know, in terms of voting and how everyone decides on stuff, because the last time they were really doing this, it was kind of before the, like, heavily social media influenced world. It would be interesting to see if that plays a part in it at all.
I think as we get closer, I mean, you know, the discussions are going to be broader, and they're going to be more in-depth, and more people are going to spend more time thinking about it than they did in previous iterations. I think that if we were to redo Vanish of Memory 2013, it wouldn't turn out that way, even if our memories had all been wiped of how it turned, like, what brought us there.
Right.
I don't think it would happen that way. And there are so many more people playing Magic. I think that we're, you know, in a broader sense, we're going to see a lot more Commander players. People that are more interested in kitchen tabletop Magic, slower games, longer games.
I mean,
we could see a black enchantment that costs 5, 6, 7 mana.
Ugh, please no. I mean, it'll be...
If I was to say design a black enchantment that costs 7 mana, what would it do?
I don't know. Being of your upkeep, you win the game, something, I don't know.
No, it's black. It'd be like, that opponent loses the game.
Sure. And that would be multiplayer fun.
Exactly.
Then it's the politics.
You lose, then you lose, then you lose.
You all get a loss. So, I mean, yeah. Ideally, all I really... Like, we obviously have to take this in baby steps. I think I would like to start in black. I think that black needs the help. Black can certainly have a powerful card that's an enchantment. It'll be interesting to see how it goes from there. I would like to see something that costs 2, 3, 4 mana at the most. I would prefer not to see an aura, unless it's insane, which I doubt it would be. Some kind of engine, preferably graveyard-related, because that's where at least we've been going. But I could easily see an argument if it's, you know, maybe it's the kind of mono-black Swamps Matter kind of card that is the tipping point for putting stuff like Mutilate back in, and, like, going back into that direction instead of going the graveyard direction. Maybe it's, you know, some kind of cool sacrifice effect sort of situation where, like, you can then...
Again, with enchantments, it's... You have all that space. I mean, how cool would it be to see something like Celestial Dawn-type cards, like, but for black, and, you know, do something else that's proactive? I mean, you know, in any world...
Sacrifice a draw card.
No sacrifice. And there's a Battlefield draw card deck.
Okay.
Black, so just like black and one, all your lands are now swamps in addition to their basic land types. You know, all your creatures and spells are black on top of it, and just a Battlefield draw card.
Okay.
I mean, I don't really think that's that spectacular.
No, it's not.
But it would just make you kind of increase the value of Grolf's Messenger and the potency in cube.
I think it would be cool.
Black life gain would be huge, because we have all these things that kill our life totals as the black drafter in cube.
It would be cool if there was some kind of, if it was some kind of, like, interesting life draining. You know, like, almost like, you know, like Siphon Soul, but every turn
What's the black sanctuary from Apocalypse?
Oh, Necro Sanctuary?
Is that the one where it's like, during your upkeep, if you could...
They lose one, and if they...
Isn't every other player loses one, you gain that much life?
And then if you
but
have
But make
both.
That a good one-on-one card.
Yeah, like, you know, even if it was just like, you know... If it was just an enchantment that's like, you know, you lose... They lose some amount of life, and you gain some amount of life. And if you have, like, 7 swamps in play, they discard a card, you draw a card.
Yeah.
Or, like, they sacrifice
it.
Like, if it was, like, a scalar effect like that, like, if you have... It costs, like, say it costs, like, 3 or 4,
okay,
right? And then it's, like, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 3 swamps in play, they lose 2, you gain 2.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 5 swamps in play, they discard a card, you draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 7 swamps in play, they sacrifice a creature, you zombify a creature.
Or put a 5/5 demon token on
the battlefield. Whatever, yeah, like something, or like, you know, so it's like, the more heavily black you are, the more powerful it becomes, and like, scales up as the game goes on. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
give some of those mono black decks, that would help a lot. I mean, again, maybe it's fixing for black, maybe it's incentive just to be black, maybe it's just life game would be nice. You know, as we're moving to a world where we want to put Skull Scrying back in the cube, we want to play Night's Whisper.
It should just be like Night's Whisper that gains you 2 life instead of costs you 2 life.
Yeah, gains you life, draws you cards. Yeah, that sounds pretty black.
For 2 mana.
Yeah. I mean, it could involve, like, second creatures or something. Again, it's an enchantment. It could just sit there on the battlefield and be like, sack a guy. What if it was black, sack a guy, gain 3 life?
Just black elephant.
How good would that be?
Like, there's
sack a guy, gain 3 life? That'd be huge in black.
There's a lot of different, you know, kind of interesting ways you can go with it. And I think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see, especially because enchantment is so wide open, it'll be interesting to see how complex they let us get. And, like, how many levels of things that they will let us do, or, like, how... Because, like, you look at a card like Crucible. Like, Crucible's very powerful, but it's also very simple. Like, it is effectively one line of text. You can play lands from your graveyard. Like, you know, Vanish into Memory is fairly complex, but all, at the same time, like, it from a design standpoint, it's, like, relatively simple. Like, you slide the guy, you draw and then discard based on the 2 numbers on the card.
Yeah.
Like, it's simple enough to explain.
But what if it had an aura on it, Eck, and I drew more? Or if it, you know, what if it gets plus for something when it's... I don't know.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'll be interesting to see, like, how complex they allow us to get.
In many ways, it feels like You Make the Card has been rebooted.
Yeah.
Because we can do anything we want since we have enchantment.
Right. We just have it be an enchantment that puts a token into play that's the creature we wanted to make.
Yes.
And then you can sacrifice it to draw a card.
Sacrificing enchantments and draw cards is very key.
It's important that you always are able to sacrifice things to draw cards.
I just want, I mean, like, again, if we could just keep it simple. Black and one enchantment, sacrifice a creature, gain 3 life.
I like all
of a sudden, like, you know, like, we're slowly increasing the value of active treason type cards in Cube, things that they're very happy to print for us in standard current limited environments.
I mean, I would be very happy with that first thing I suggested, the, like, Entomb for Guys every upkeep.
Yeah, I don't know. There's gotta be something we're overlooking.
Well, of course there is. I mean, there's obviously something that's gonna
be... I mean, I'm saying, like, there's gotta be something with that effect that we're overlooking. That's gotta be too good, right?
I mean, it'd be good in Dredge, but isn't a 2 mana enchantment that triggers on your own upkeep too slow?
For tournament playable Dredge?
Yeah, for like Legacy or Vintage Dredge.
I don't know.
Like, they don't even play mana, right?
Well, there are various forms of Dredge, but to me it's like none of them... some of them cast spells that cost 2 mana. They definitely cast... the vast majority of them cast spells that cost 1 mana.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they cast ones that cost 2 mana.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they let us even get to touch on the graveyard, because I think they've realized how powerful of a resource being able to exploit your graveyard is. So it'll be interesting to see, like, if they...
It waxes and wanes.
It'll be interesting to see what kind of limitations they put on us when it gets to the point of, like, submitting rules text. If they say,
I mean,
like,
you could submit whatever you want, but the things that they're going to show as the choices you have to pick from...
Right.
...are going to be reflective of how they... feel is appropriate, you know, not overly complex, et cetera, et cetera. If you were just to submit a card out of nothing, because again, we're still so wide, it's not like...
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've, you know, we've hammered it home. We want black. If it wasn't going to be black, it would be green. And if it doesn't end up being black or green, we'll go back to the drawing board when we get the next...
We'll just make another Sulfuric Vortex that you could sack to draw a card. That'd be fine.
Or, like, you could, like, what if Sulfuric Vortex, you could sack it, deal, like, 4 to a creature?
Sure, why not? And at the same time.
Yeah, Android at the same time. Was there anything else on our...
We can talk about Magic Online Champs. We could analyze our buddy Sam's draft.
Oh yeah, that was the bonus thing. That's much more of a video side than a text side. Do you really want to read for everyone? So
I mean, I do want to talk about those drafts, and we do have them in draft.
Here's what we do for today. For the live viewer crowd, for those of you that came out on the East Coast, the few and the proud, because we're not in our regular time slot, we'll go through Sam's pack. For the podcast portion of this, we'll bid adieu so that Eck doesn't have to read the name of every single card.
That'd be nice.
And we'll do a bit of a bonus for the live side, since we're here at a different time slot, and you guys are here. We'll go through that. So on the audio side, just to wrap things up, this is a bit of a bonus episode. We want to talk about the Skeleton Cube. You can find all of these resources at ekamon.blogspot.com. Check out the Skeleton Cube list. Use it, hopefully. We put some time and energy into it. It's fun just to go to FNM with a trade list. It's even more fun to go there with the intent to build the sweet cube.
Absolutely. If you're feeling particularly generous, there's a donate button on the site as well.
Yeah,
cube streaming.
We're upping our professionalism. Again, we are bringing you a bonus episode here on Monday. We are trying to smooth over the abortion that was last Wednesday and bring you some more quality content. You can currently find us slowly catching up pace on mtgcast.com. We are looking to further our Magic community involvement through other outlets. So check out our interactive Reddit posts that will usually go there. Salvation, a little less so, but still on Salvation. And looking to kind of permeate through other areas of the community. But that is pretty much it. If you just go to the Blogspot, our contact info is there, the Cube List info there, the Cube League info is there, the Cube Achievements info is there, the Cube Picks are there. That's pretty much all the important stuff.
I think so.
So, until next week, when we hope to have updates on our artwork and sweet guitar riff for our new intro music, that'll be pretty much it on the audio side. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on Wednesday or whenever you're listening to this later.